How do you like the studio in there, Kelly? Did you feel at home?
It's like I was meant to be there.
Got it. You just felt it.
Did he? Yeah. I need the contract. I'm a little old now. They're like, ma'am, go start a family. Please. We're begging.
I don't think you want to sign with Diddy anyway. You don't have a good history. Well, you know. But maybe you can use this career to get to that career.
No, sir, because I will be 45 by that time.
And so Chance was like 30 when he finished that.
Okay, well.
Just saying.
I'm right around the corner.
Oh, right here? Okay. All right, Kelly, are you focused? I know you were fantasizing about, you know, your Miss Career and all that with the girl group. And Career. It doesn't have to be Miss, though. I'm telling you, people start late sometimes. Jay-Z didn't put out his first album until he's 26.
Renee
didn't put out her first movie till 30-something.
I'm already past.
Okay, but you're not 30 yet.
I mean, I'm a blink and I'm a be there. I need the...
You never know.
Diddy,
if
you're listening, sign me.
You don't want to be signed by Diddy.
I just know that he brought...
Have you heard the horror stories?
He made Dream.
And how long did they stay out? Exactly. Okay, welcome to episode 49. Of the All That Podcast. Today is just me and Kelly, or Kelly and me. I mean, proper English. It's just us today, no guest. And this episode will be full of hot topics that we picked to talk about today. And every week, you know, it's a lot going on. A lot going on every week. So one of the things that happened this week, I'm not sure the exact day, but I do remember... Which is crazy because I had been watching Dave Chappelle's stand-ups randomly. Just because I think Dave Chappelle is the most brilliant person on earth. I really believe that because he's so smart and then he ties it in with comedy. Comedy. So I think he's brilliant. The most, I might be, you know, engaging in hyperbole here, but he, to me, is the most brilliant person on earth. So I have been watching him, listening to his old stand-ups. I get on Twitter. And I see Dave Chappelle just dropped a surprise special on YouTube. I'm like, oh my God, let me go check this out. Now, when I saw it, I was thinking that it was going to be, I knew he would be speaking about things that were going on just from the title. And the title is 8:46, which is the amount of time that the cop had his knee on George Floyd's neck. So I knew, that it would have to do with that. I just thought he would tie it in like he does everything else and make it really funny. But when you watch it, and even at one point in the stand-up, he was like, this is not funny at all. You know, it was more like a sermon kind of. When did you watch it or when did you see it?
I watched it this weekend. And yeah. I kind of was under the same impression. Mm-hmm. And to be fair, I mean, I loved Dave Chappelle as well. When he was talking about, oh, I'm going to get to this portion later on, and then he's like, actually, we're just going to talk about it now. You can tell it was kind of out of like his zone to not joke, because at one point he laughs, like you mentioned, and then you can tell he's like, this isn't something to laugh about. But it really was, I was kind of waiting for the jokes to come, and it really, I mean, it brought up a lot of things that I hadn't known about, kind of like the police officer and everything. But yeah,
and the police officer she's referring to is Chris Dorner. Now, the way, when you heard this, you know, to me, at first I thought he was setting the story up to defend the police officer that he was talking about, but he really was bringing around a whole point and tying it into what's going on right now. So he tells a story about Chris Dorner. Chris Dorner is this black police officer, or ex-police officer, that worked with the LAPD. Him and his partner, who was a white lady, went to... I don't know what the word is, exercise or call. I mean, they had a warrant, right? They had a warrant, and he saw that she was doing some excessive things to the person that they went to. And so he reported it to his bosses, and he was the one who ended up getting terminated. So he went through every legal avenue that he could to get his job back, and he didn't. So he wrote a manifesto, and he said that he is going to wreak havoc on the members of the LAPD. And he ended up shooting two police officers that were in their squad cars. He went to another police officer's home and shot and killed their daughter. And so when they finally found him, he was in Bear Creek, somewhere he was, like, isolated. But when they found him, Dave Chappelle was saying that 400 police officers showed up to answer the call. And he said the reason that they did show up to answer the call is because one of their own had been killed. So how can't they understand what's going on in the streets right now? And I was like, wow. Mm-hmm. Boom. Like, he just tied that together so perfectly. And I had people, a lot of my white friends, older, like 30s, they're hitting me. Did you see the Chappelle? Did you see the Chappelle? It's brilliant. It's brilliant. It's brilliant. And I even sent it to somebody I work with. That, you know, I see saying some interesting things on Facebook. And I sent him this special. I didn't get a reply. Because the thing Chappelle was saying in this, and you can't argue with. Like, how can you argue with these things he was saying? So I thought that was brilliant. I love Chappelle. I think when we look back on this time, when, you know, all this, I hate when it's saying when all this is over, because I don't think it's ever going to be, quote unquote, over. Until, you know, it is.
Yeah.
But I think that'll be something we look back on, like, as a timestamp. Like, Dave Chappelle, 8:46, that was a moment.
It's also a moment just because he was one of the few that had already done a show since the COVID thing. So I thought it was interesting they also played in the beginning, showing everybody having to be distanced and stuff like that. It's such a weird dynamic. I mean, this year itself has just been crazy.
Speaking of markers that we use, I think when we look back on 2020, Kobe's death would be like the thing that everybody's like, when Kobe, after Kobe died, everything went downhill from there on.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it just seems like that. The Kobe died directly after that, it just went down real quick.
We've been having a tough time.
Yeah.
I see people saying it, but I genuinely feel it as well. I think I've aged.
You think so?
Years. Within the past few months.
How so?
Like, but I also feel like March was 2 years ago. It's been the fastest, slowest
year in history. Like, I agree with you so much.
Yes.
I think a part of that is because we were forced to stay home. And so the days are longer a little bit. Like, when you're at work, this is my theory about why when you get out of high school, life seems to move at such a fast pace. It's because you're always looking forward to the weekend,
mm-hmm.
right? So yeah. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday seems to fly by because your head, you know, you're looking forward to the weekend. You're not really, you're present, but you're not present.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think with us having to stay home, the days are so much longer. Like, we have long days, and it's like, man. But then you look at the calendar, you'd be like, man, it's June already?
Yeah.
You know, so
crazy.
That's crazy. Like, the oxymoron of the fastest, slowest year ever.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what this is. And a couple other things he said in the special, he talked about Don Lemon. Now, Don Lemon was on CNN, and he was calling out all the celebrities. And Chappelle was like, why are you worried? Like, who wants to hear from their favorite comedian at a time like this?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, the streets are talking for themselves, so why would I overstep that? And I agree 100% because we look to these celebrities for answers when a lot of them, one, didn't ask for that position to be a social justice warrior, and most of them are not equipped to be.
Yeah.
So, no, they, you know, they come out and they say something, and then it's like, okay, why do you say that? And did that become something that distracts from what's going on? So,
well, yeah. And when he said that, mm-hmm. it kind of stuck with me just because I have fallen guilty to expecting certain people, mm-hmm. and I like the Kardashians.
Yeah.
Something about just them in particular, I was like, you of all people should be at least saying something.
Mm-hmm.
But then when he said that, it made a lot of sense. Like, what possibly could they be doing
mm-hmm.
that we already aren't doing?
All right.
Out in the streets, like you said, protesting and trying to make a change.
And then a lot of people might not publicly say something. Like, you'll probably never, you know what I'm about to say. sometimes they say something publicly, but you'll probably never hear Jay-Z get on Twitter or Instagram. He don't have Instagram, but on social media and say anything. But he's doing a lot behind the scenes. So,
and it's kind of like Kanye. Yeah. Everybody was mad Kanye wasn't doing anything. Mm-hmm. And then something he didn't even put out. I don't know how it leaked or whatnot, but he had already had George Floyd's daughter's college fund set up for her and everything.
Yeah,
and
already,
it was a lesson to myself as well to quit expecting, because some people just like to do things in
silence. And the line that Chappelle said, don't think my silence is me being in agreement with what's going on.
Well, I would like to say something on that.
Even though he wasn't silent because he released a special book.
Well, yeah. But think about all the people who were on Twitter saying, if you aren't speaking up, then you're agreeing.
Yeah.
Does that still fall for them as well?
To them, it does, I guess. Not to me.
So you think that if somebody didn't say anything?
Okay. It's different situations. Like you say, you expect the Kardashians to step up. There's a reason why you do, though. Because you're looking at it like this. Okay, the Kardashians have profited so much off of Black culture that when something happens, we're like, okay, you got to say something because, you know, you're profiting off of this, but you don't want to speak up on it. Now, you know, kudos to them because they have, most of them, or the family has came up. And, you know, Kim has been very active since, I think her having her children has made her rebrand in a way, because now that she has Black kids, you see that she is working with criminal justice now, trying to get people out of jail that's been wrongly, you know, has been in jail for even wrong crimes or been in jail way too long than they should have. I think her rebrand is great. You know, I have no problems with Kim. And most of them, they do speak up on stuff. Now, I know you had a problem with Kendall Jenner, and I'd really...
Come on, man. Yeah. We need something.
Yeah.
Besides a couple of reshares, especially after the Pepsi stunt. Come on, ma'am.
I think she shut down her social media something. I guess because people were speaking about the Pepsi commercial. Here, have a Pepsi. At the end of police brutality. Racism is done with a drink of a Pepsi.
Which, not even trying to joke right now. Yeah. I have never trusted anybody who likes Pepsi products over Coke products. I had to bring it in. I'm so sorry.
I guess that goes our Pepsi sponsorship if we ever get one.
No, we're only doing Coke products that you can drink.
Oh, man. Coca-Cola product. There you go.
There you go.
Chappelle, just a genius, man. Another guy, comedian. Ray, you might know this person, but I know a lot of people my age might not know him. Is George Carlin, who was just another guy who was a comedian, but he tied in social issues in a brilliant way. And I recommend everybody go listen to George Carlin because he was doing this, you know, way before Chappelle was. But a lot of people my age for sure might not know about George Carlin, but he.
Carlin shook up. You can't hear me. Carlin shook up stuff well before anybody else.
Yeah.
He was the guy that shook up everything. He was a clean comic. He was on Ed Sullivan.
Right.
And then he got figured out how to do things right. And then he started going really
in a great direction. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was. Another thing that has happened that is kind of alluding to people using their platform is NBA players led by Kyrie Irving. They are saying that they do not want to come back and play because they feel like that the NBA resuming its season will take away attention from the movement. And I don't necessarily think that's true because, like, if they said they didn't want to go back because of COVID, obviously there's no argument there. Like,
Yeah.
You know, that's just common sense. But I think that the NBA coming back is going to give them a much bigger platform to speak about these things in the first place. Because if you look at sports and the intersection of social issues and sports, it's been going on for a long time. You look at Tommy Smith and John Carlos. in the Olympics. I think it was 68. I'm not sure. Don't quote me on that. But at the Olympics, when they raised their fist, you know, during the national anthem, you look at, obviously, the person that everybody's talking about and the person that is synonymous with taking a knee, Colin Kaepernick. That was during a sporting event. You look at the greatest athlete of all time, Muhammad Ali, and the stances he took as an athlete. You know, so sports and social issues have been intertwined for a long time. So I think that them having this, all millions of eyes on them, is a good thing. You know, I think they can use that platform to speak further about what's going on right now. It doesn't have to be like, you know, a thing where if they play, they just have to shut down and not talk about it anymore, obviously, because the NBA is the most progressive league out of all the sports. Back when Eric Garner died,
I was about to mention that.
Yeah, all of them wore the I Can't Breathe shirts, you know, so the NBA has always been progressive when it comes to social issues, for sure. The most.
Well, and we need to continue to take the opportunity, if you're in front of cameras, to find some type of way to, if anything, I agree with you. I think it's more publicity and a chance for them to say something, because it's like the infamous Kobe picture wearing the I Can't Breathe, which is now extremely sad. But, right. I mean, they've always found a way to make a stand in whatever way that they needed to.
Right. So I don't see that changing. And also, like Patrick Beverly tweeted the other day, if LeBron says we're playing, we're playing. So that's the end of it. And LeBron has never, ever, ever shied away from speaking up about something, an issue. So I'm excited to see what the players are going to do, because I do believe they will ultimately play, because, you know, like you said, LeBron say we playing.
Yeah.
You know, that's like Tom Brady. Tom Brady says the NFL season is resuming. It's resuming. So I think, you know, they could take that opportunity and that platform that the NBA gives them to, you know, further spread the message. So we're going to get a little bit off of, you know, the topic of what's going on with, you know, the race and all that, blah, 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 to talk about B. Simone. B. Simone caught some flack for saying that she does not want to date a 9-to-5 kind of guy. She would rather date an entrepreneur, because an entrepreneur type of guy would understand her lifestyle. Now, I'm going to let you go first on this, because I think we might disagree. What did you think of her comments?
I try to see all sides of it. And this is just going to be my own personal opinion on her. I always, you know, I have friends who will say, this is the type of guy I'm looking for. I want him to have a good job. I want him to look like this. I want him to have good money, all of this stuff. Something I always tell them is, okay, but you don't think that they're not looking for the same thing? Y'all have to match the same energy.
I like that.
Is what I always say.
Yeah.
Now, for her, she walked, be some mom. Yeah. She came on talking about as if she has this huge business. And I'm sorry, I do not know who she is. I really don't. You couldn't tell me. You know, and thank God for Twitter, because that's probably the only reason why I would know about her. I guess recently she came out with a book, and it pretty much was scanned copies of pictures. The book was falling apart.
Yeah. Plagiarized.
This is what I say to her as well. If you want an entrepreneur, then come with the same energy. And right now I'm not getting that from her. But I also do believe that people with 9-to-5s, there's different types of 9-to-5s. You know, there's somebody who's in the oil and gas industry. There's somebody who's in construction. Yeah. Those are two completely different,
two different
jobs.
Yep.
I, while oil and gas makes a lot of money, I have more respect for people in construction, because they're out there doing all the, you know, in the heat and doing
work.
The hard work. And they're doing, you know, and those people don't get that type of recognition. So I can understand she's wanting somebody to be on her same level, because I myself am guilty of needing somebody to match my energy and my work ethic. But I don't know. Something about it coming from her just doesn't sit right.
There's a lot of rich people who work 9-to-5s.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
But
so
Here's why I thought we might disagree. Because just if you take her statement, not really looking at the messenger, just take the message about her not wanting to date somebody who works a 9-to-5 and wanting an entrepreneur. I don't have a problem with what she says, with that statement, because how can I disagree with her preference? That's what she likes. You know what I mean? Like, well, yeah, if I come to somebody and say, I like my woman to have curly hair. That's my preference. I'm not saying anything is wrong with women with straight hair. That's just not my preference. Mm-hmm. And I understand what she's saying about the entrepreneur thing and understanding relationships. I was telling my friend, I'm going to leave them unnamed for their privacy, but I was having a conversation with him the other day, and I was like, about this, and I was like, I understand what she's saying, because if you didn't have, most women wouldn't understand your lifestyle like your current girlfriend does, because they both have that same mindset. Mm-hmm. You know, and people look at entrepreneurship and they romanticize it, but it is not that romantic. Like, you, entrepreneurship is not, you know, what the glorified version that people try to make it.
Yeah.
You know, it's either you sell something tonight or you don't eat. Like, it, no in between. Like,
yeah.
You know, 9-to-5, you have some security there. You know, it's a job. You know, you every 2 weeks, you know, you're going to get your check. Like, it's, there's security there. Entrepreneurship, not any security. So, if you look at it from that angle, and I'm not sure if she even looked at it from that angle.
I was about to say, you know what I mean? I am not quite sure that that's what she was thinking of.
Yeah. You think she was thinking of the romanticized version.
Well,
of
that
it.
And the money and security and stuff like that. Yeah. And it's exactly like you said. Mm-hmm. When you become an entrepreneur, it's not like you wake up one day and your business is completely booming.
Right.
I mean, that takes years and years of establishing.
Yes.
Something about just watching, you know, and she kind of said the same thing. I'm not knocking a 9-to-5, but she still in a way was.
Yeah.
Making it seem like all entrepreneurs have this money and have this lifestyle that she has, which, again, I don't know what her lifestyle is. I just see her partying in Miami. So what type of entrepreneur is she? Oh.
Did you go there? But having – being in a relationship with somebody who is more 9-to-5 kind of person and the other person being more entrepreneurial can work, because – that's my situation. Like, my girlfriend is a 9-to-5 person. Like, you know, that's her thing. Me, I'm the opposite. I hate working for somebody else. And, you know, mm-hmm. But it works because she is supportive.
Yeah.
Like, she understands, you know, she understands my mindset. So if I need to go out somewhere, if I'm staying somewhere a long time, she's fine with it. Because she knows. And I think if you care about the person you're with, at the end of the day, you're going to want them to do what they have to do for them to be happy, respectfully.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
But that's what I think. I think it can work. I think I've seen it work myself, you know? So, mm-hmm. I mean, it's her preference, like I said. So I don't.
I guess if you put it that way. You
know, that's her preference.
Yeah.
She's up to 3 a.m. in the morning plagiarizing books. But hey, that's her preference. All right, we're going to get off beat some more. I'm sorry. You know, I don't want to come on. I know the internet is already doing it, you know, heavy on you right now, B. You know, I wish you best of luck. You know, maybe you need a 9-to-5 guy, right, to give you some structure.
Yeah, right?
Because entrepreneurship don't have a lot of structure to it.
It looks
like
it's not providing much structure for you as well.
Maybe,
so. Yeah.
Maybe the 9-to-5 guy gives you structure, you know, what you need. Maybe that's where she needs to go. But,
or maybe.
What?
No.
Go ahead.
I was going to rip the book up some more.
Go.
I mean, I just can't. I'm going to stay quiet.
What,
ma'am, the book was a mess.
She was selling funeral programs. That's what it looked like.
No.
You know how the funeral
and
program
some girl was like, don't get it confused. Mm-hmm. The shine in this video is just my flash. She said, these are dusty pages.
It's funny that she said, you know, all this about entrepreneurship when she literally plagiarized another entrepreneur's work.
Yeah. That's why I can't be on board with what she's saying, but it's exactly what you said. It's a preference. I could go out there and make a video. No one's going to agree with the type of people that I like.
Right. Even though it changes every
It does. All right. Yeah. You know what? But we didn't.
I'm sorry. We're not getting on you right now.
Yeah. Dang.
Anyway.
All right.
That's what we're doing. But, all right. Moving off of B. Simone. I had some very interesting conversations with some of my friends. And it's important to say what race they are for the, you know, topic of this conversation. They're in their 30s, Caucasian. One's a lawyer. She is an entrepreneur now. She used to work for the Texans. You know, she's in that, you know. They both have good jobs, put it that way. Okay, so we were having a conversation. And she brought up some very thought-provoking questions to me. One is, good catch. If we are bringing up, not bringing up, tearing down all these Confederate statues and monuments because of the history of them, should we, actually her husband asked me this, she didn't, should we get rid of the N-word from even from black people because it has that same horrible racist origin? Now, at first, I was kind of like, no, because I was like, you know, in every culture, there's words that are off limits to other people. Not even culture, situations. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, me calling my girlfriend a certain, you know, word, like baby or babe, mm-hmm. would be disrespectful if I call that to another woman.
Yeah.
My grandmother, we call her a name within the family. She don't like when people outside the family call her that name. You know what I mean? Because, you know, it's no relationship there. Mm-hmm. Gay people call each other the F word. If somebody outside of that community call them that, it's a little different reaction. Women, you can attest to this, call each other the B word. All the time.
It's endearing sometimes.
Exactly. But if I or Ray or my brother or any other man joined in that conversation, mm-mm. it would be a problem.
It'd be on site.
So that was my rebuttal to them about the N-word. But that is an interesting point that they made, though. If we're trying to get rid of all this history that was racist and that was, you know, horrible, and we're trying to get rid of all that, get rid of it, should that word be included? What do you think?
I mean, for me, I would say remove it, just mm-hmm. because I don't feel that it's still necessary to tell a story of history.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. There, that could be completely completely removed, and still you would be able to tell the story of everything that happened.
Yeah.
It's not adding to the conversation. It's not doing anything. So for me, I would say remove it.
Remove it. But how can we even remove a word is the question.
Well, nothing would ever be 100%.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you could, technically say, let's remove.
I'm just saying, how do we go about getting people to be like, you know, just so why? Because it's so ingrained in my culture. Mm-hmm. Because what we do as black people throughout history is we turn something bad into, and we transform it to something good. So we get scraps from the slave masters, turn that into soul food. The N-word through Richard Pryor, and really he was the one that kind of made it poetic, the word, you know, with the A. And we took that horrible word, probably the worst word in the dictionary, you know, move that to a term of endearment, to, you know, with each other. And it's so ingrained in our culture. Like, I don't know.
If we could ever stop saying it. Yeah.
You know, even though, like, I cringe a little bit. Not when we say it in front of each other, but I've been with people and they'll be using the word in front of, like, an older white person or even an older black person. I get kind of like, ooh. You know, because older an older generation of black people have a totally different viewpoint on that word, and they don't think it should be used.
Yeah.
Our generation, we came up in a Richard Pryor, you know, hip hop generation, where we kind of, you know, like I said, made the word poetic. But older generations, there's even a divide between black people on that word. So I don't know if we can ever abolish it.
No.
But it is something we're taking a look at. You know, because you can't look at the origin of the word. You can't change it. Like, that's the origin of the word.
Yeah. So are we talking, like, in historical context, like in textbooks and stuff? Or are you just saying word, period?
Period.
That's not going to be possible.
I don't think it is either.
Because even though you said, in a way, changed it into a poetic manner, mm-hmm. it's in almost every rap song.
Everyone.
So,
and then that's another problem. Imagine, I don't think anybody white has an excuse to say that word, period.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
But we've I feel like it does.
We've been friends for a very long time. I've never heard you say that word.
And ever. I never will.
Ever.
And mm-hmm. But I do, mm-hmm. I want to say, I feel like that opens up the door for mm-hmm. especially white men to feel like, because that's it's in a rap song, I can say it.
And, I was just about to say that.
And I've been around, me and Stephanie were talking about this mm-hmm. weekend. We used to be around this guy, and he was friends with a lot of black guys, but he was very white. Mm-hmm. He would say it all the time, throw it into a conversation like he was one of the guys. Mm-hmm. But none of them corrected him. But me and Stephanie would be so uncomfortable. I just remember being in my head like, please stop, please stop. Like, I didn't want people around us. Because, you know, somebody could be at the table across from us and not realize mm-hmm. that his friends at some point, I guess, have made it seem like he should feel comfortable saying that. You should never feel comfortable saying it.
No. Shouldn't even want to say
it. Yeah.
Like, why?
Yeah.
But, to your point, though, with the rap, you know, if you're in at a concert, and, you know, I'm not giving them a pass, but, you know, you end up blowing, you done it, all my, you know, people just feel like, man, it's kind of hard to bleep it out, but it's really not. You can do it.
Yeah.
If I'm rapping in front of my grandmother and there's a cuss word, I stop.
Yeah.
I don't say the word. I just, you know. So, but the thing is, black culture is so dominant in American culture that everybody wants to be a part of it. That word is very much a part of that culture. Mm-hmm. So people are like, why can't I use it? Or, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so it's a lot. It's a lot.
But
it's
that's
a,
weird
it's
to
a
me.
It's a lot of conversation. Yeah.
That's weird that people can sit back and be so bothered and so anxious and so confused. Why can't I use that word? Mm-hmm. Why does it matter?
That's because
it's
there's a sense of entitlement there.
Yuck.
Mm-hmm. Somebody
Morgan,
might
I'm
even
to
say
you,
to you,
yuck.
Some people might even say to you that they created the word, so why can't they use it?
Sir.
I'm just saying.
No, I'm sure there is, but it just disgusts me to, like, mm-hmm. I don't know, the original word makes me cringe.
Yeah.
Like, if I ever hear it, you know, in old Westerns or anything like that, it disgusts me.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know, why would you want it for somebody to say, well, we made it, why can't I say it?
Yeah.
That's one thing you should probably keep to yourself. Yeah. Don't be pride, or like, don't be proud of that.
Here's another thought I have about abolishing that word is that people give words power. And even when it comes to removing these Confederate statues and all that, which is, you know, necessary, I think. Mm-hmm. But, like I said, people give words power. So say, hypothetically, we find some way to abolish the N-word. Nobody can ever say it. You get 300 years in prison if you caught saying the word, right? Hypothetically. All that's going to happen is they're going to find a replacement for that word. Mm-hmm. A white man coming to me and saying and calling me a boy in a certain way, in a certain tone, is equivalent to him calling me the N-word. Because the intent behind him calling me that is the same.
Mm-hmm.
So if we can go around abolishing words and putting down statues, but the real work is changing the person behind the word. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, until you change the person, because the word is just surface level. You know, the issue is with the person. It's racism. So how do we deal with that? Because when you deal with the racism, then the word is probably not going to come out anyway.
Exactly.
So we got to find a way to change people's heart at the end of the day. Yes, it's a beautiful gesture to get rid of these racist people that we celebrate in history. Yes, it is. But it's not going to change anything. You know what I mean? We just don't have to look at it now. But guess what? In London, they had a whole hundreds of people showing up at that Winston Churchill statue like, you're not about to tear that down. You know what I mean? And they had the, you know, it was chanting all kind of racist stuff. Mm-hmm. Also, hey, we got to change people at the end of the day. I want to close with this. And this is so much progress. And I think the reason that police have so much power is because we put them in front of things that they necessarily don't need to be in front of. Homelessness. Problems at school with children. You know, in these neighborhoods where, you know, housing is horrible and all this. We put them in, we give them too much power because we put them in all these situations that they're not necessarily needed. San Francisco passed the law, and I'm going to read it to y'all because this is huge. This is from the Los Angeles Times. San Francisco police officers will be replaced with trained, unarmed professionals to respond to calls for help on non-criminal matters involving mental health, the homeless, school discipline, and neighbor disputes as part of a new wave of police reforms. I think that is huge because there are actually countries to where their police officers don't carry guns because they're trained so well on how to de-escalate a situation that they almost never have problems because they're trained so well. So for them to do that, I think that's like a huge step in the right direction. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
No, I agree. I think that it's kind of like they assume cops are a jack of all trades, mm-hmm. but there are certain people who go to school and have a passion for helping kids who are in domestic situations or, you know, I am guilty. I have called the cops before because for wellness check, mm-hmm. I was under the impression somebody was going to commit suicide and I called the police.
Yeah.
Well, if you're not passionate about, you know, you always see these videos of people trying to pull people off the ledge, stuff like that. If you're not passionate about it, you're like, yeah, we'll drive by, I guess. And that's essentially kind of the response I got.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, no, I need you to go in and sit with him, have dinner.
Talk
to him, because if anything, if a cop shows up, he's probably going to be frustrated at first. And that's when you bring in a psychologist or mm-hmm. a therapist or something like that to kind of, you know what I mean?
Right.
I just think we have to start viewing them as a jack of all trades and find people who are catered specifically to that issue.
Exactly. I agree 100%. Shout out to San Francisco for that. Hopefully there will be more states and cities to follow that, because I think it is so necessary. And people, that's what we mean by defunding the police. People think, you know, we want to get rid of the police, you know, completely, you know, just wipe out police, period. Like, no, like in situations to where they're not needed as much.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we mean. Like, we've given them too much power, and then there comes the abuse of power. You know, cosmetologists. They have to be trained longer than the officer does for mm-hmm. their craft.
Yeah,
that's a problem.
Yeah,
and you're going out into. Trust me, I sympathize with police officers. It is a dangerous job, but you knew that going into it. And they need to be trained better. Period.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot go a couple of weeks of training and you think you can handle the plethora of things that's going on.
No way.
You know what I mean?
No way.
So, it's so many problems. You know, you get, you know, bonuses for more. It's just a lot. We can spend a whole podcast on that. A lot of things that's wrong with the criminal justice system and that. But like I said, shout out to San Francisco for taking that step forward, and hopefully we have more cities and states that follow. So yeah, this is our first podcast, just us two.
I know.
Except when I interviewed you. Other than that, before you know, years ago. But I think we did really good.
Yeah, I think so.
Tell us what y'all think. Leave a comment, subscribe, all that. No pun intended. That's it for episode 49. Peace.